All right, Shane. So you want to go, or do you want to go, or do you want me to go?
I'll go, man. It was Memorial Day weekend. We're supporting the Patriots of America, so I think we should let's see what's up with Mac Jones and Bill Belichick. All right. So as I mentioned in episode 83, I want to see Mac Jones hit the gritty a few more times this year. And I really want to take a dive into why there is a QB controversy, why the team was so shit, and what we can hope for the Patriots this year. So right off the rip, I really think that even though we shouldn't point the finger at a lot of things in life, we do have to point the finger when it comes to sports, because there are reasons why things happen. And I want to point the finger right at Bill Belichick because he's the captain of the Patriot way.
Yeah.
And the Patriot way failed Mac Jones entirely last year outside of Ramondre Stevenson. So we're going to kind of roll it back to the last season just to get a quick overview of what went wrong, and then we'll dive into some other stuff. So Bill Belichick installed general piece of shit and moron Matt Patricia, a quote-unquote defensive-minded coach, to be the offensive coordinator, and Giants failure in 2 years, Joe Judge, to lead an anemic offense every week. Per PFF, the Patriots ranked 17th overall in points scored and were graded as the 20th offense overall, which is like wild when you think about how quote-unquote high they are graded in relation to how bad they looked on tape and how bad they fell apart. And I really think they were inflated by Ramondre Stevenson just going nuclear. So we saw it. We saw the frustration on Mac Jones in point of the season where he was visibly upset about how that offensive scheme was ran. So at the combine, a defensive coordinator stated that there was a simplicity to the offense that they can be solved relatively quickly, and the team wouldn't have to take anything off the table of like sacrificing a defensive scheme or doubling up on a player because their offense was so simple and their depth was not, there's no like all-star on that team where they had to be a threat, right?
Sure.
So last year, the Patriots had two weapons. Jacoby Myers, who finished as wide receiver 28 in PPR, according to Sleeper, which should be way higher when you're the number one option on the 20th best offense. Like, those things don't really correlate to me. Like, you should be right at least 25 or higher. And Ramondre Stevenson, who I believed played at a ceiling of his career, as finishing RB7. And it's honestly a miracle to me that he finished that high, as he only had 6 total rushing touchdowns for the year.
Yep.
So for Mac Jones, inconsistency stemming from his injury, coming back from injury, being blown up by good defenses, is kind of why Bailey Zappi was a thing for a little bit, but I don't really feel like that controversy is warranted compared to like the controversy in, say, San Francisco with Brock Purdy and Trey Lance, where I think if Kyle Shanahan had his way and drafted Mac Jones at 3, Mac Jones would be talked about a lot differently in regards to his career arc.
Sure.
So even though Mac Jones missed 3 games, his efficiency remained the same, as it relatively stayed around 67% pass completions. The air yards took a significant hit, losing around 700 yards compared to 2021. But if you break it down, if he played an average of those games with his 7 yards per attempt, he'd still hit his rough shot air yards for the year if he threw around 230 yards per game. And due to the Patriots also playing from behind more in 2021, Mac Jones lined up in the shotgun 15% more in 2022. And with little weapons, I don't really think that plays to his strengths as a passer. He's more kind of a dink and dunk passer with more of a weak arm compared to like a, we're going to bomb it down the field and play catch up. So I think a lot of their plays were based off of that.
Makes sense. All right.
So now that we're done with the doom and gloom, I really want to look at the silver lining. I spent a lot of time with Bill O'Brien in Alabama, even though a lot of Alabama fans and college fans would say that Alabama's empire crumbled last year, just basically because they lost all their talent. They're not the factory that they were before. So the Patriots brought back Bill O'Brien to be their offensive coordinator. And while Bill O'Brien does have stink on him from his tenure in Houston after he was fired, overall, he is an over 500 coach, and he has the ability to mentor and bring out the best of QBs in his past, with known piece of shit Deshaun Watson and Bryce Young. Who's not a piece of shit. That's an addendum. There's a comma in that statement.
There's a comma. Yeah.
And honestly, even if Bill O'Brien does kind of suck, I think he's a blatant upgrade over Matt Patricia. Just right out the gate. Like, I don't think you can get worse than Matt Patricia at developing talent. And so Bill O'Brien really made the most out of the offense in Alabama with a declining talent pool, but also being propelled by the number one overall pick, Bryce Young. So while I believe Young does deserve his flowers for making chicken salad out of chicken shit, the scheme shift did later portion of the season to accommodate for Bryce's injury and lack of offensive weapons, which I think is kind of like a nice mirror, or at least foreshadowing into the way that the Patriots are going to be set up with kind of a mid-tier quarterback and a limited talent pool. Like, I will say, I believe Bryce Young is a better quarterback than Mac Jones, but I think they have similar play styles of being more system guys and cerebral as opposed to like a rushing type.
That's a really good comparison. Yeah,
I agree.
So it honestly smells like a success for the Patriots. And granted, it's not a division willing talent, but I believe Bill O'Brien is walking into a similar talent situation. Like I said, under Bill O'Brien, Alabama beat the SEC in percentage of plays ran in bunch, empty, and stack formation. So if you're like me, who's only recently into football, I had to go and look up like Pee Wee football, how to explain it to kids of how formations are. So bunch formation is a success, is successful as an offense because you're basically bunching up all your tight ends, wide receivers to one side, and it allows for a mix of run pass options in the formation. And it basically is utilized to exploit the defense where they have to decide if they're going to stack the box, how the play is going to be operated, which I think is going to be honestly really utilized within this format, the way Bill Belichick likes to play football of two tight end sets with a running back in the back and then kind of utilizing short passes with the receiving room. So empty formation is when the QB is one only person in the backfield and it's empty. Pretty self-explanatory. It's using the passing game. And I think that was utilized with Bryce Young during his injury so he could have more time to operate off the snap. Same thing kind of how like Mac Jones was last year where they were playing behind.
Yeah.
Then the stack formation is kind of self-explanatory as well where you stack the offense to one side and you make the defense again guess. It could be a hitch, it could be a go, it could be a mix of the two, and you also have an option for the running back to be in the back, which is Ramondre Stevenson. So now some passing statistics for Alabama. So they finished overall fourth for the pass rate at 55% and over 60% during meaningful minutes. And meaningful minutes is defined as third down, fourth down, and the two-minute drill. And on third down, Alabama threw 89% of the time with 58% with less than 3 yards to go on third down. So Bill O'Brien likes to play it really aggressively. Again, I think that was more or less based on him trusting his quarterback. And I think even though I don't anticipate that to be the case going forward, I think it's a good mentoring for putting faith back into Mac Jones because he looked like a quarterback who was kind of broken, where I think this is now a revitalization of confidence because
sure.
Because Belichick has stated, like, there's no controversy. He's our guy. It is what it is. So Alabama finished 20 with a 21% explosive run rate, which means runs that go for over 12 yards, which is Ramondre Stevenson's bread and butter that we saw. And that the Alabama system initially started as a pull system, but they had to switch over to a zone because their physicality was lacking, and they had to exploit the zone scheme to basically utilize the running back who they had last year. And in 2022... the success of Ramondre Stevenson was led on that because Bill Belichick realized that Sean McVay and Shanahan know what's going on and utilize that system to exploit Ramondre to the best of his skill ability.
Sure.
And Alabama ran 52% on first down, which I know Bill Belichick's going to cream in his pants over that one. So you're probably asking what all these formations numbers mean for this year. Well, so we're going to start off with the draft and see what the depth chart is like Ryan did, just to kind of give a rough shot view of what the offense is going to look like, who we really want to pin down for fantasy, what is viable for us this year. So
yeah,
the Patriots only drafted two offensive players this year for the in the sixth round, both times. So pick 187, Fallen from Grace, Kayshon Boutte, and DeMario Douglas, who I have never even heard of until I did this exercise. Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that the Patriots, I didn't look at their draft really. I didn't realize they only got two offensive players.
Yeah, it was defense, special teams, like just like ripped them out. So to me, the biggest winner of this draft is Ramondre Stevenson. So there's no competition aside from James Robinson, who only has a $1.7 million cap hit, which is extremely low for running back. So it's being stated that he might not even make the team with that. And there are rumblings from Ty Montgomery as being the change of pace back and a third down back, but we know how the carousel of Patriots running backs work out. So I really don't think that Bill Belichick is going to try and get cute and try to play the guessing game with the guy that he has, who he knows can be successful because Ramondre is that guy. So I'm going to dump his stats from last year really quick. So he had 200 attempts, 1,040 yards, 5 yards per carry, 90 targets, 69 receptions. Nice. 6.1 yards per reception, 714 yards after contact, 19 missed tackles, and 16 broken tackles.
Yeah, Ramondre was a beast last year. Yeah.
So I think I mean, unfortunately, he's not going to be the guy at the value that you got him at last year, kind of like Jamal Williams of like, oh, I can get him on like the 12th round or the 8th round and really cash out on that. So currently, according to 444, Ramondre is the 28th player off the board and RB10 around Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, DK Metcalf, and Breece Hall. And I know his those guys kind of change.
Yeah, his draft stock's definitely gonna jump up this year after last year.
And for me, a bias too is I have a really hard time spending high draft capital on running backs unless I'm in the first like three or four picks, because my personal view of fantasy is the ROI is so hard to nail down on a position that gets injured so prevalently that I don't want to spend high draft capital on a guy who might not play the season.
Right.
So you're at pick 304 right now, and you got to pick one of them. You got Ramondre, Josh Jacobs, or Breece Hall. Who are you taking?
Ooh. Is it full or half PPR?
It's full. I only play full, so this is the example.
Ramondre, Jacobs, or Breece Hall?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a tough call. I might be kind of, even though, you know, the old saying is you never roll with a Bill Belichick running back. I feel like Ramondre is going to do good. And do we even know if Breece Hall is going to even be healthy for?
He was by week one. They had some tweets out this week that saying he was like clocked in at 21 miles per hour on like the speedometer or whatever they were tracking him. I don't know what that actually is because I didn't see video, but I, like you said, I'm always hesitant of running backs coming back year one after ACL. Luckily, it's not like a Javonte injury where it's just a clean ACL tear, but still, it's something to be wary of.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's his first year, so he's super young. So he's going to be able to be one of those guys, I think, rebounds pretty quick from that injury. But there's always that chance that he's just not the same as he ever was. So yeah, I think I'd roll with Ramondre.
Well, Ryan, you'll have to tell us where Breece Hall is at when you cover the Jets.
And Josh Jacobs, because he's covering the Raiders too.
I love Ramondre Stevenson. It would be really difficult for me to take Ramondre Stevenson over Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, I was kind of at that point too, just based on ADP. And I understand the ADP relatively changes, right? Like I've seen Josh Jacobs go like early second sometimes. Like, so obviously this data is going to be irrelevant at a point, but just as a thought exercise at that point, I thought that was an interesting point. So now we're going to move on to the wide receivers where it gets really murky. For Mac Jones and us as fantasy players. So Mac Jones is going to throw to Juju, Kendrick Bourne, Devonta Parker, Tyquan Thornton, and Kayshon Boutte. So on the surface level, none of these guys really like give me inspiration to draft any of them outside of like Juju, just based on name brand alone. So while Mac Jones is no Mahomes, I do feel that Juju is coming to the offense to be the number one, like by a wide margin, because Tyquan Thornton had what, like 5 catches last year. I don't ever think I've ever seen Kendrick Bourne make a catch, and I know only Carl loves Devonta Parker.
Terrible. So,
I do feel that Juju does take a step back from wide receiver 27-22, just based on system. He's not playing with Mahomes. He's not playing an Andy Reid system.
Right.
So Juju ran 54% of his snaps in Kansas City out of the slot, which is a tremendous downturn from his time in Pittsburgh, while having a jump and running out wide at almost 40%, which I don't think is going to be the system that he's going to play in this year.
No. Bourne and Parker will be the outside guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So based on the way this offense is scheme, unless Boutte takes like a gigantic leap forward in camp and Bill Belichick just like falls in love with him and he like marries his daughter or something, I don't really want to bet on anybody besides Juju, especially as like the slot target guy. So I know slot targets guys got a lot of shit this year in the offseason of all the rookies were slot targets. And people are like, oh, they're not home runners, they're not going to put up numbers. But 100 targets a year on what should be a run first team is something I do want to see, especially at the value that Juju's at. So Juju finished 2022 with 78 receptions for 933 yards with an A dot of 7.2 yards, 730 air yards, with 17.4 team target share with one of the greatest tight ends of all time, Travis Kelce, which was like very surprising to me looking at those numbers. So per 4-for-4, Juju's currently ranked wide receiver 50 around the likes of Tua, Charbonnet, Bateman, Elijah Moore, and Jamo. So in round like 9 and 11, I think this is kind of where you can win fantasy gold. I know until I told Tony this off the rip, but I think Juju is going to be a quote unquote league winner based on this value of you can get someone at value, because you can get someone who I believe can either be a wide receiver to fill in or a flex play every week in the 9th to 10th round, compared to other players, where if you have a younger team or younger core, you can come on slower and still have Juju fill in that role for you while you're waiting for, say, like if you want to pick a JMO to come back in 6 weeks or of Hopkins has to acclimate to the offense that he's in. So,
and you think a lot of that is attributed to like game script, because don't they have one of the toughest schedules this year? And like, they're probably going to be playing down a lot of the time.
They have the hardest schedule out of anybody this year. Yeah. Their division's pretty tough.
It's officially the hardest schedule.
That's what Warren Sharp said when it came out.
Okay.
Yeah. I trust Warren Sharp.
So pick one: Juju, JMO, or Elijah Moore.
Elijah Moore.
That's super tough.
Give me the wide receiver 2 on a high volume pass offense over the wide receiver 1 on a low volume passing offense.
Good point.
Okay, now here's a fun one just based on ADP. Juju or Charbs?
Charbs.
Yeah, I like Charbonnet.
I was with you there too.
Charby fully loaded, baby.
He's going to be sneaky. So every other wide receiver I really don't care about. Unless it's best ball, otherwise they're just bench fillers. It doesn't matter to me. I don't want to waste, even if you got like a 30 bench team league, I don't want to have any of these guys. It doesn't matter. So I don't really want to brush off the next position because I don't think it's really fair, but I'm not excited about the tight end position for New England. So unless you're in a 2 tight end league or a really high tight end premium or a 14 or 16 team league, you're not going to have Hunter Henry or Mike Gesicki on your team unless one of your guys gets injured. So I do think Mike Gesicki is going to be the tight end in this room. I don't think his fantasy success is going to be relevant at all in comparison to other tight ends you can take at later points. I mean, granted, Mike Gesicki is going to be free, but it's going to be a really big coin flip to me of how they run Gesicki versus Juju, because 49% of the time Mike Gesicki ran in the slot. So I don't know how they're going to mix those two in together. And like I said, I would only take a flyer on Gesicki if I had literally no other option. You can take Justin Tucker, Zach Evans, Izzy Abanaconda, the Bills defense, Sam Laporta, Jonathan Mingo, or Rashee Rice all over Gesicki. Hunter Henry is just a shitty Ryan touchdown of the week DFS play.
that's
basically what he is. And I know he's talking about
that. He's going to be a DFS play for sure. You're going to just have to pick that week you think he's going to get a touchdown.
Same with Mac Jones. Mac Jones is a guy who's ranked 27 around Purdy, Stroud, Tajay Spears, Michael Mayer. And I don't think you're ever going to start Mac Jones in a one quarterback league unless like you have the most terrible luck and all your dudes get injured, or you just have really bad league mates who hoard all the quarterbacks. So I'm not going to go out and go draft Mac Jones. But I think Mac Jones will finish above his ADP of QB 27. And I think QB 20 is something you could kind of anticipate in at least 3 gritties this year.
That's the Patriots. The Patriot way. Well done. A couple of good recaps so far. You guys ready for the Chargers?
Fuck yeah. Get me fucking mad.
All right. Here we go. We're going to start with the quarterback.
I do like, Tony, how you did wear your Charger shirt today. For everyone listening, Tony is rocking his LA Chargers shirt.
There you go. Bolt up. All right. So Justin Herbert fought through a rib injury for most of last season and still returned as quarterback 11 on the year for fantasy. That's not great, but it's also not too shabby for a dude on a Joe Lombardi offense.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, his play last year.
He's hurt.
That Charger offense was supposed to be explosive.
He was very boom bust.
You want to talk explosive? Let's talk about Justin Herbert's 8 average depth of target last year, 6.8 yards per attempt. that puts him right around Mac Jones, Aaron Rodgers, and Daniel Jones.
And that's crazy for someone who did so well 2 years ago. Like,
I'm getting out of my chair and I'm getting onto the balcony. Someone talk me down.
So here I will talk you down, because the year before he was at 7.5 yards per pass attempt. And as a rookie, he was at 7.3. So last year was the outlier, right?
Yeah.
He only threw for 26 touchdowns last year, which is something that I think is more terrifying than his yards per attempt. But hopefully, you know, a boost in both will help him rebound. That 26 passing touchdowns is down from 38 and 31 his other two seasons. So I'm expecting positive regression to just hit this year. There's no way he throws under 30 touchdowns if he plays all 17.
I'm hoping that Herbert can eclipse 40 this year. That'd be awesome to see.
Well, I got some shit for you. Okay. So I think we're going to see a lot more no huddle this year, because that's something Brandon Staley's been saying and not delivering on for years now.
He does love the gas pedal.
And they don't press it, but you know who does? Kellen Moore. So let's talk Kellen Moore, because he's the new offensive coordinator for the Chargers. In the years that Kellen Moore was running the Dallas offense, Dak Prescott averaged between 7.4 and 8.4 yards per attempt, which is almost a full yard above what Herbert had last year. So the Chargers are going to let Herbert air it out a lot. Kellen Moore loves the downfield passing attack. And ironically, like, the deep ball is Herbert's good at it, but it's the deep intermediate, the like 15 to 25 yard pass, where Herbert really, really excels. Last year, they didn't let him do it, though. 17% of his targets last year were between 10 and 19 yards from the line of scrimmage. And he was at 20% last year. So it's like, all the things you're good at, let's have you do it less.
Well, that's the thing, too. It's like the question mark of, like, I know you're going to get into this, but there's a three-headed hydra here of what the issues were for the Chargers, right? It was injury, Joe Lombardi, and Herbert not being Herbert.
Right. And I think you could tie 1 and 3 together, because I think Herbert learned his lesson after watching Tyrod Taylor get his lung punctured. He's like, I've got a rib injury. I'm not letting any Chargers team doctor anywhere near my center mass.
Yeah, I'll just play. I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
Right. So we'll talk about the wide receiver room in a second, but I still think that this is a huge bounce back year for Herbert. I think he's got top 5 fantasy quarterback potential this year, even without the running threat, because even with the bad ribs, terrible play calling, and injured O-line, Herbert was a top 10 quarterback in 9 games last year, but only a top 5 quarterback twice.
He's got to have a good comeback year, right? Or is it this year or the following year that he's going to have to get paid?
This year they can extend him.
Yeah. So I think those numbers go up because I think they're going to let him have the longer ADOT. I think he's going to get more downfield passing and they're going to find him successful. And just keep in mind, guys, the Chargers play the Chiefs twice. They play the Bears, the Lions, the Vikings, the Ravens, and the Patriots. Those are all defenses that will either struggle to get to Herbert or struggle to cover all their options. So I'm pushing chips in on Herbie this year. 4-for-4's redraft rankings, Herbert is QB8. So would you take either Trevor Lawrence or Daniel Jones ahead of Justin Herbert?
I don't think I'd take either of them, because I think Herbert's going to finish in top 6 this year. I do like, Daniel Jones, and I always love Trevor Lawrence, but mm-hmm. I think Daniel Jones and Trevor Lawrence will finish within the top 12. And I think Herbert's like, he's going to have that bounce back here. He'll be top 6.
Well, let's talk.
Questions always for me is Herbert, Lamar, or Fields. Those are the three I'm having the tough time on of who do I go with? You know what I mean? Because that's a different tier of points being output.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah,
I think they all get you to 300 points in different ways.
Yes.
So let's talk about someone that I'm not as hot on, and that's Austin Eckler. Austin Eckler was the true unicorn last year, finishing as RB1 in PPR despite never having more than 19 carries in a game and not breaking 1,000 yards rushing.
Well, he's going to be 31 this year, or 32?
I think he's 30.
How old is he?
30. He's 30. Yeah.
So
is he only 30?
Yeah, he's 30.
Well, that's like 105 in running back years.
So he caught 107 passes last year and scored 18 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's always been PPR gold.
But you have to expect some touchdown regression just because of law of averages. He's not going to score 18 touchdowns again this year.
No.
Unless you think that Austin Eckler is just Christian McCaffrey minus a DVD copy of American Sniper. Which he could be. I don't know.
You never know, man. There could always be that exception to the rule and he just breaks records. But
well, here's what I'm worried about is the switch to Kellen Moore will make things less bountiful for Eckler this year. So Kellen Moore has already gone on record looking to keep guys fresh late into the season using a running back rotation. So I'm expecting Kelly and Spiller to cut into Eckler's early down work. Eckler had 217 carries. Kelly had 75 and Spiller had 18. And we all know that split's not going to be the same next year. There's no way.
I mean, Josh Kelly has shown some flashes when there's been injuries, but he's never been able to slide into that role.
We need Fat Lenny. That's who we need.
So check this out. So in the last four seasons that Kellen Moore was the OC in Dallas, here's what the running back carries have looked like. In 2019, Zeke had 301, Pollard had 86. In 2020, Zeke had 244, Pollard had 101. In 2021, Zeke had 249, Pollard had 134. And last year, Zeke had 254, Pollard had 214. So I think Austin Eckler is still an RB1 next season, but he's certainly not going to be the top back in fantasy because Moore's going to spread the work around. Like, if Eckler got 217 rushes last year, you imagine with Kellen Moore as offensive coordinator, he's going to get less, right?
Yeah.
He had 127 targets last year. In all of Kellen Moore's career as an offensive coach, no combination of running backs have added up to 127 targets.
Really?
Yeah,
he runs more than just screen. Oh shit, we're losing. Bomb to Mike Williams, punt.
Yep.
Right.
So 4-for-4 has Eckler as RB2 in half PPR and RB2 or an RB1 in full PPR. And I say no fucking chance just because I don't think the volume is going to be there. I take him actually, and this might sound like heresy, but around Tony Pollard, Breece Hall, closer to the end of the first, maybe Jonathan Taylor, Saquon area.
ADP is weird right now, like really, really weird. Like I'm seeing like Saquon 107. I'm seeing JT consistently like 109, 110 when he was like CMC or JT 101, 2022.
I just took Barkley at 111 in a best ball tournament.
Dude, that's a steal.
Really?
No shit, right? So he's no longer going to be the workhorse. He's the 1A in a larger committee. And I think that's good for the team as a whole.
He's also stated, too, he doesn't want that many shares of the rock. He's like, my body can't take it.
Right. I'm not going to make any play right now towards either Josh Kelly or Isaiah Spiller. I mean, both are fourth round picks that haven't gotten a ton of meaningful work. But right now, if I had to draft, like, who's the guy you want as the backup in LA, it's Josh Kelly.
Yes.
Yeah. If Moore gets the scheme up and running and there's a clear 1B in that backfield, I push for him and try to get him because I think we'll start to see a phasing out of Eckler in every down work. And I think by this time next year, he's probably gone.
100%. They're not going to pay him. They wouldn't pay him now.
What's Eckler's contract look like? Does he have any remaining years after this year?
No, this is his last year, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Then he's
He wanted to be traded during the draft.
Right. So let's talk receivers here, because this is going to be where the money's made. So if I'm betting on Herbert to take a step forward, let's talk about how this is going to affect the wide receivers. So we're going to take these numbers with a grain of salt since Keenan Allen and Mike Williams both missed time last year. So we have per game averages here. Keenan Allen, 8 targets, 6 catches, 75 yards. Mike Williams, 7 targets, 4 catches, 68 yards. Josh Palmer, 6 targets, 4 catches, 48 yards.
That guy that they drafted this year that was comparable to Mike Williams, I think he's going to emerge as a potential two or three wide receiver this year.
I totally forgot to put him in here.
Did you not cover Quentin Johnston?
No, I'm just kidding. All right, okay, so,
I was like, holy fuck, no way.
So Josh Palmer's numbers actually look pretty nice on paper, but are inflated by his splits in games without either Allen or Williams.
Right.
In games without Keenan, Josh Palmer had almost two more targets. In games without Mike Williams, Palmer had over three more targets.
I also think that only Keenan Allen and Mike Williams played like two games together last year. It was a super low number.
It was not often. So you might be asking me why I am, in spite of the insistence of my two co-hosts, starting the wide receiver section out with Josh Palmer instead of Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, or Quentin Johnston. And the answer is, he's the key to figuring this whole thing out. So I don't think we know a ton about where these wide receivers are going to be and how often, with Kellen Moore being in. How does he value? What is he looking at? And I learned my lesson last year when I faded the entire Dolphins wide receiver room because I thought they were going to run four slot receivers every play. Oops. So Josh Palmer ran 74% of his routes from the outside. Keenan Allen was in the slot 64% of the time. Gerald Everett, we'll talk about him in a minute. Mike Williams was on the outside 85% of the time. This tells me that I think we can write down in pen that Keenan Allen's slot percentage goes up from 64%. And we see rookie Quentin Johnston more frequently out on the boundary than Josh Palmer. All Kellen Moore offenses have had at least four pass catchers run more than 400 routes in a season, so it's not a reach to assume that Allen, Williams, Johnston, and Palmer can get plus-level targets. So I broke it down for you based on averages, all right? The alpha target in a Kellen Moore offense averages about 135 targets a year. The second target gets between 105 and 110 targets. The third option gets about 90. And the fourth gets about 75. So I believe we can just plug in Keenan Allen as the alpha and just be like, here you go. Here's your 135 targets. Have a great day.
Yeah, he just plays the CD Lamb role.
So you bring up a good point. He's still just as good of a route runner as before. And most notably, CeeDee Lamb's 2020 and 2022 seasons, when he ran primarily out of the slot, like, you're going to see Keenan get those routes. That's huge for Keenan Allen. I'm not of the mind that Johnston takes food out of Mike Williams's mouth, since on a per game basis, Mike Williams is still a fucking dog. He still has boom weeks that win you games.
He's a better best ball receiver that I would rather have.
Sure.
I usually don't draft him in teams, but if you have best ball too. But like, I think, I don't know if you're going to cover this. I hate to bury a lead if possible, but Mike Williams broke his back in week 17.
Yes.
And he never got surgery on that, and he has not showed up to camp yet. So there's like rumblings that Quentin Johnston pick was like, we did need a receiver no matter what, but we also need a receiver that does something similar to him to fill that gap if he takes an extended leave of absence from the team due to his injury.
And the proof is shown by the numbers that if Williams is out, Palmer does fine.
Yeah.
And so Shane, if you're – go ahead.
Do you know exactly what the injury was? Was it upper back or lower back?
I don't know. I have to look it up. I just remember being really mad because we didn't even need to play that game and we lost.
Well, I mean,
it wasn't
like Johnny Knox like level.
No,
it was like a micro fracture, but still like,
okay. So most likely it was lower back. If it was upper back, there'd be
cease. Oh no, never mind.
You don't want to fuck. You don't want to mess around with upper back injuries.
Yeah, he broke his C6 in 2015, and then. Yeah, I don't know. It's not
broke his C6, so that is upper back.
That was in 2015.
Well,
it's fine. Go ahead.
So the most frequent aligned boundary receiver on a Kellen Moore offense has averaged about 100 targets a season, which is right about where Williams has been historically. I think, barring any injury or comeback struggles, Palmer and Johnston share that other boundary spot, but I think it's Johnston's to lose. Both receivers are 6'2", and they're within 2 pounds of each other. But Johnson has a better 40 time, and his vertical is 6 inches higher than Josh Palmer's.
Ooh.
Well, that's the wild part, is like, even though Quentin Johnston like is big, he plays relatively small for his frame. And granted, that's something you can phase out of somebody.
Right. So here's the rub, though. Johnston does something that Palmer and Williams don't do, and that's break tackles. The biggest issue with Moore, as I watched his like articles about him start as like, this dude's a future head coach, to like, everyone hates your offense, fuck off forever, is none of the receivers on that offense break tackles. Moore was said to over rely on his tendencies to call what they call static routes. These are routes like the curl, stick, and hitch, which means the wide receiver is turned to face the quarterback. This means the opportunity to run after the catch is on the wide receiver to catch the ball, turn around, break a tackle, since he's not catching it on the run. In Moore's time in Dallas, over that 4-year span, the Cowboys were 28th in the league in percentage of receiving yards that came after the catch.
I mean, it fits for the receiving core, right? Like you were saying, is like their athleticism isn't there to have that quickness and ability to break those tackles.
Correct. In my scouting review, I called Johnson a menace after the catch, especially in the second level of the field. So this seems like a match made in heaven. I think he puts up similar numbers to what George Pickens did last year. You could expect around 75 targets, 40 to 50 catches, but he could end up being the most productive wide receiver in the class if the team allows him to eventually take over that Mike Williams role. Sure. If he gets 110 targets a year, they're going to be in a good spot. So I believe Keenan Allen is a steal at wide receiver 14 on 4-for-4 right now. I want none of Mike Williams at wide receiver 19. I don't want any of that.
My guy.
Goodbye. Josh Palmer is 4-for-4's wide receiver 93. So have fun with that.
Waiver wire fodder.
And I'm going to boldly say that Quentin Johnson will, by the end of the season, return on value at wide receiver 61.
I believe it.
I think that's more than fair. I think that's it's a little conservative.
Yeah. So, all right. So I'm of two minds on Gerald Everett this year. On one hand, tight ends feast in Kellen Moore offenses. So I asked our former guest host, Hunter, and lifelong Dallas Cowboy fan, is the reason why tight ends crushed in Dallas because Kellen Moore loves throwing the ball to the tight end, or is it because they've never had more than two decent receivers at any given time? And Hunter was like, Dak loves tight ends, and who are we going to throw to? Michael Gallup? Yeah. So Lamb and Cooper were a dominant force on a Kellen Moore offense, but the tight end got a ton of looks since Dallas was rolling out Gallup as the third. But as an offensive coordinator, you would rather have Quentin Johnston over Michael Gallup.
Yeah.
Ta-da. So I think Everett is primed for a down season. He's a guy that runs 40% of his routes out of the slot, and I think he's going to have less snaps there as Johnson kicks Allen to the slot more often. The Kellen Moore offenses run out of what the, you know, like three wide receivers, one tight end, one back, so 11 personnel. They run out of that formation at one of the highest rates in the league, and they pass when they're in that formation at one of the highest percentages. So he's going to be taking those really short passes. He's not going to be getting anything over the middle of the field consistently.
Because off the top of your head, where did Gerald Everett finish last year? Tight end, what, like 24?
He was. I think he was 18 or 19.
Okay.
He was tough. He was never consistent. So it was always tough to pick that week where he was going to do well. And most of the time, I picked the wrong week. You know.
Well, Everett was also like Palmer, dependent on who was healthy.
Yeah.
He could not get himself open to win targets when, you know, everyone was there. So
I also think he lost trust within the coaching staff because that Chiefs game, all he had to do was catch that single pass and he got fucking winded and let the defensive back go. And they just like, were like, all right, No dog. No passes.
They ignored him being like, please replace me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a majority of his formational work this year is going to come as an inline blocker, which is actually the position he got a lot of his work in last year. Everett will pop and have a few big games since passing off of play action from a heavy tight end set is a Kellen Moore offensive staple, but you don't, it's like Kate Otten and Hunter Henry and Mike Gesicki. You don't want to start Gerald Everett. He's a streamer at best, and though plays will be called for him specifically, I still think on a given play, he's no better than the third or fourth target.
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
So to summarize, I'm up on Herbert. I'm down on Eckler. I'm up on Kelly. I'm up on Keenan Allen. I'm low on Palmer. I'm low on Mike Williams. And I'm
You're out on Mike Williams.
I'm out. Yeah. And I want nothing to do with Gerald Everett. So that is the Chargers.
Very good, Tony.
First three, baby, in the books.
That was fun. This is probably, by the time you're listening to this, episode 2 or 84.5. So thanks for sticking it out. Next week, do you guys know who you're going to do next week?
I got to look at it.
I haven't decided yet.
I know you have half your teams done, Tony, so.
Yep, summer break. I've got a lot of stuff already done. So we'll come at you guys next week. Thanks for sticking with us. Any final thoughts before we go?
Be well.
No.
All right.
I think we covered all the thoughts.
No thoughts. All right, everyone. Good night. We'll see you next week.